The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Hello, I am Millie.
And I'm Bailey.
And I'm Frances.
And we are
the Musketeers
from Motueka High School.
Welcome back to the Musketeers. I have Luke Walton, the head of counselling from Motueka High School. Luke, would you care to introduce yourself?
Sure, thanks for having me on, Francis. It's a great opportunity to come and talk about mental health and what we do at Motueka High School. So I'm Luke Walton and been a counsellor now for about 8 to 9 years, and I was a high school teacher before that. I was head of performing arts at Nelson College, which was an interesting experience. And was a student of performing arts and worked as a musician and an actor as well before that. So I've done quite a few interesting things. But definitely counselling, and also work, have my own business 1 day a week. So 4 days a week I'm at Motueka High School as a school guidance counsellor and manage the other counsellors. And then 1 day a week I work in men's mental health in Richmond, in an office space there, which actually is not always exclusively men's mental health, but that's sort of my area of expertise because that's what I studied. So I'll see anybody, but I guess I'm advertised as men's mental health and have some contracts working through careers and other agencies, specifically working with men with issues. So yeah, that's me.
What led you to wanting to proceed a career in counselling?
Well, that's a good question. My father's a forensic psychiatrist, and my auntie is also a paediatric psychiatrist, and my mum's worked as an RTLB and done psychology as well. So I've sort of been around mental health practitioners my whole life. When I was working, so a forensic psychiatrist, they work with very, murderers and criminals, and analyse and assess how safe they are in society, and will present that in court. So as I used to live with my dad for periods of my life, my parents are divorced, and I would watch my dad in court present evidence about some relatively high-level criminals, so it was pretty exciting. And I did filing part-time for him as well. And I remember I was filing a file, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. That looks like a piece of meat, a photo of a piece of meat, but it was actually a body that had been cut in half from a murder scene. So as a young boy, I guess you can't help but be intrigued by those gory factors. I know that's a bit macabre, sorry, but I was very interested in what he was doing career wise and, you know, was around that a lot. But I think the thing that I did study psychology at university, and then I found it quite boring, actually, incredibly boring, very dry, and it is quite dry. I went through and I ended up with a minor in psychology and studied, I guess, moved to anthropology and performing arts, and I loved those subjects, particularly at that time, anthropology. But I had a brilliant lecturer at university, and I was really interested in the psychology of acting, you know, how people could be believable on stage and in film, you know, and I studied a lot of Stanislavski. So I feel like acting is a form of social psychology anyway in that study, and to me that was much more interesting, you know, being on stage and performing, but also studying that content. And I fell in absolute love with improvisation and how to apply improvisation as an artist. So I did a lot of improv work as well, both in music and as an actor, and did a bit of film there too. So that was a great space. Dunedin's a really cool space as a student for having an audience, you know. So I joined a metal band, and at that time it was sort of like System of a Down was big, kind of random sort of metal punk scene. And so we were experimenting with a lot of jazz riffs and doing a lot of sort of interesting off-timing, and we got quite a big following. And so I guess for me, you know, I was really engaged in the performing arts, and we opened for some pretty big bands like She Had, you know, D4, Datsuns were pretty big at that time. And so we performed with those guys. But in that scene as well, it was a pretty vicious scene. Like, excuse me, I got a bit of a tickle. You know, I was exposed to a lot of violence touring. A lot of, you know, fighting from guys, just in that kind of heavy metal scene, you know. So I could see some damaging effects of drug use and alcohol use in terms of mental health for people. Personally, I then decided, you know, I had to make a decision at that point if I wanted to continue in that scene or go to sort of concentrate more on my academic, and I decided to at that point go to teachers college, and that was probably a very good decision, I think, because and actually all the band members, I think, kind of naturally gravitated towards that, you know, chefing, and then decided to go into professional world, although the guitarist did go right through to jazz school and did quite well. So yeah, that's where it sort of started. And then through education, I worked at, like I said, I was at Nelson College for 15 years, and became head of performing arts there. And I think the first time, the moment that I decided I wanted to move, I was very successful as a performing arts teacher. I won, you know, multiple national awards in theatre sports and improvisation. I had a Globe scholarship. I'd kind of done everything I wanted to do. I produced two major productions. I was really inspired by Shakespeare at that time. I performed Romeo and Juliet and Macbeth, and then I had a moment where I was working with a lot of Māori and Pacifica boys in fight scenes, and I used to drop these boys home, and there was a moment where I was dropping the last boy home, and he was lovely, and I'm not going to name names because he still lives in Nelson, and he'd been working really hard, you know, for me, helping choreograph scenes. Actually, he was a very creative young man. I used a lot of his ideas. I kind of made him the unofficial choreographer, if that makes sense, and he had very natural leadership skills, and I was driving him home. He lived in social housing, you know, emergency housing. And as I was dropping him home, his dad was getting arrested, and it was quite violent. And it was quite a violent arrest. And I think at that moment, I realised I wanted to do. Yeah, and I took him back to my home, and fed him, and made sure he was all right, and found other accommodation for him. But I just felt at that time a huge amount of empathy for him, and wanted to do more in that space for young men who were struggling. So I was really inspired to do work in adolescent males, particularly in adolescent aggression, which is what my thesis was on. So that's long. Sorry.
No, it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's kind of where that, I guess, my history comes from in terms of wanting to be in that space.
Would you say mental health has gotten worse or better over your line of work?
I think probably the same. Like, so worse in some areas and probably the same. Yeah. The biggest concern for me is a sort of what I see here is young men not accessing counselling services, aggression, depression and suicidality in males. In young women, the thing I am most concerned about is anxiety levels, which lead to pretty significant behavioural issues. One of the things I'm really concerned about with young women and probably in our school is I feel there's a real under diagnosis of ADHD in young women, and that might sound like a minor issue, but actually I think that leads to major issues in young women. And I think our rate is very low, something like 0.8%. So I had a look about a year ago at some of the statistics, and you know, we should be about 7%. And I examined a study, the Berkeley study, which is a study about ADHD in women, and the consequences for young women who aren't diagnosed with ADHD are pretty shocking. You know, every possible unwanted behaviour that you could imagine for a woman to experience would be experienced. So higher levels of STIs, sexual assault, unwanted pregnancy, depression, suicide, anxiety, all those difficult issues. So in a weird way, the thing I'm most concerned about in young women is not being diagnosed by ADHD, which sounds minor but is major, and in young men, not engaging in services. But we do tend to pick up ADHD in men, and that's a little bit genderized, but and obviously there are crossovers, but we do see different patterns in young men and young women at this age, I guess. So yeah, does that answer that question? So,
yeah. Basically, yeah.
Yeah, cool. So that I think it's really specifically depends on the circumstance, but we've definitely seen an increase in suicidality, and I think that's because there's an idea, and I don't want to get too complex about this, but there's an idea that Huberman talks about. He's a pretty well-known sort of social media neurologist and psychologist, and he talks about the pleasure-pain principle. All right, and the pleasure-pain principle is an interesting principle because I guess previous generations have experienced greater levels of physical pain in terms of like manual labor, doing jobs, the hard graft and grind is what is kind of like valued, you know. And the reason why that's valued is because it actually creates dopamine, right? When you do really hard physical laborious things. And what our teenagers are experiencing at the moment is dopamine erosion. So they're actually seeking out pleasure all the time, gaming, devices, drugs, alcohol, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And that actually, when you just erode dopamine, creates pain, like mental health pain. So the body is kind of evolved to balance these two things. And I don't think, I think some of our young people need to become more balanced and resilient and actually look at their whole health holistically. Like, what are you doing physically that's actually building dopamine? Like, it's just a practical question, right? How are you actually creating more dopamine so that you can feel rewarded? Or how do you feel rewarded is by doing things that make you feel that are worthwhile, like this podcast that you're doing right now. Hopefully you have a sense of reward in that because you're working on something that's useful, right? So at the end of this, you might have a dopamine hit or something. But does that kind of make sense? I think that's one of the biggest issues that we're seeing in teenagers for sure. Yeah.
Right, we'll take a moment to take a song break. Luke, would you like to pick the song?
Yeah, I would like to hear Regular John by Queens of the Stone Age. Thank you.
Would you say poverty has had a fairly strong effect on certain families, especially mental health-wise?
Yes, I would definitely say lower socioeconomic areas have higher rates of mental health issues across the board. And we can see that in our own region, areas like Victory. Mochawaka is a decile 5 school. And having worked at Nelson College, which was a 7 or 8, more significant issues here. There's also some very wealthy people here, right? But kids who come from impoverished families are going to be struggling and stressed. So yeah, definitely, definitely. I also think, though, and this might have a slightly positive twist, is that there are opportunities for communities to come together and collaborate. So, for example, Victory has Victory Boxing, which is not just a boxing place, it's a place for young men and women, but it's also offers lots of social services. And I think we have that, like we're right now in Community House, right? That's it's got massive amounts of different opportunities for people. So I think the character of a place will and a community will help areas, you know, that are like that, and that can build very strong communities and opportunities for people. People who come from trauma backgrounds are often very resilient people and successful people because they have faced hardship in life, and then minor things in life aren't as significant for them. So yeah, it's a complex question. Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, just thanks for having me, Francis. I really enjoyed talking with you today about mental health. It's a massive passion of mine. I'm doing the Gloves Up for Gumboot in November 7th, and that money all goes towards mental health services for adolescents. And, you know, we know that, you know, even just one session with a counsellor can save someone's life. So yeah, I hope to raise about $5,000, so that'll be, going to a really good cause. Yeah, hopefully I won't get hurt or punch in the face too much, but we'll see. Yeah, but yeah, looking forward to that. And yeah, thanks again, thanks for having me.
One more thing, do you get to work with the family of your clients?
Yes, we do. We offer parenting plans. We also refer out to agencies like RISE. So with the student client's consent, we can offer services to adults. And RISE is a social service that offers anger management and domestic violence help. And also in my own private practice, I often see parents as well. So yeah, definitely connect. Parenting plans are great, because it helps families navigate the space with their kids, and also gives the student a voice to help as well. So yeah, we definitely connect with families as much as we can. We start from, obviously, with consent with the student, and we can't do anything without the student's consent, but students who need help with their families usually always consent. Yeah, so definitely, yeah.
That's great.
Cool.
And right before you go, would you like to pick one last song to send us on our way?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Francis. I would like 46 and 2. I've been talking a little bit about metal in my youth, which is another metal band. 46 and 2 from Tool. And the song's about human beings evolving, and not evolving physically, but spiritually, into people who have deeper understanding on their emotional state. So I love this song. It's one of my favourite songs. Thanks.
Thank you.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.